To the left-hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel header, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
Listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Hope you're all good, hope you're all well. Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. The day after, the night before, the day after Arsenal went up to Sheffield and absolutely slaughtered Sheffield United on their own patch. And broke some records. You know, I've been sort of taking it all in. Last night, we recorded the kind of post-match show shortly after the full-time whistle. We went through it all. We discussed, you know, how we were feeling and the fact that Arsenal, you know, had once again really, really impressed us. And it's only when I kind of wrapped up last night, got into bed and started scrolling through Twitter and all the other various places that I realized actually, yeah, you know what? Arsenal have been on good form. The eye test has told me that. And the basic statistics have told me that we've been really, really good. But the underlying numbers, the underlying metrics, these numbers are scary. And that's why Arsenal fans are feeling so good at the moment. That's why Arsenal fans are feeling confident that we can give this title run a real good go again. Now, I'm not even saying that we're going to win it because I think it's going to be incredibly difficult against two sides that have been there and done it, against two coaches that have been there and done it. And I think we've got probably the harder fixture list of the three sides in contention. But there's no reason, looking at all of these numbers and sort of looking at the way we're performing, to not feel like it's possible. So, of course, there's some hope there. And I know people will say it's the hope that kills you, and sometimes it is. But if you don't have that hope, and if you don't have that enthusiasm for what's to come, then what the hell is the point? On this episode of the podcast, we are going to break down last night in numbers. I'm going to bring to you a load of statistics and facts that I've collected throughout the day. So you won't have to spend as much time scrolling through the internet as I did. You can find all that information here in one place. We're going to look at some of the goals, some of the movement for the goals. We're going to discuss Arsenal's passing network. And we're going to take a load of questions and thoughts from the live chat as well. So there is loads and loads to get into. It's another jam-packed episode of the Chronicles of Aguna. If I could kindly ask, if you haven't done so already, please do leave a like on the video. If you're watching us on YouTube, it really, really does help. If you're watching the video, subscribe. If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review. It really, really does help on whichever podcast platform it is that you take the show in from. Now, a lot of the stuff I'm going to go through today is going to be quite visual. So yes, you know, if you're listening on audio and that's what you prefer to do, please do stick with us and I will do my utmost to explain all the visuals that are involved in this show. But if you would prefer to go over to YouTube so you can watch the thing and see the visuals that I'm going to use to help me explain some of the points that I want to make today, then feel free to go over to the Chronicles of Aguna YouTube channel. And while you're there, make sure you're subscribed. You know the drill by now. Look, let's get into it. We'll say a few hellos just after this, and then we're going to dive straight into the content because there's loads to get through in the next hour or so. Good afternoon to all our lovely people in the live chat. So many of you, I'm not going to go through and do individual shout outs because we'll be here forever. But I did like this one from BX Gunner 81, who said, "Somebody call the coroner. There's been a massacre." That's certainly how it felt last night. Of course, up at Bramall Lane. Those of you that were in attendance, get in touch. Let us know how it was. I didn't make the trip up to Bramall Lane, but it looked like the atmosphere was brilliant. And why wouldn't it have been from an Arsenal point of view, given the way that the game panned out? Okay, I think we'll start by going through some of the goals. I think I'd quite like to do that. And, you guys know that I often talk, don't I, about the fact that we like to attack with a front five. And I think one of the things that kind of really played into our hands last night and made it as easy as it was the fact that Sheffield United started the game with a back four. Now, it didn't take long for Chris Wilder. I think it took him around about 15 minutes to recognize that he'd made a really stupid mistake and that he needed to change things. But I just want to kind of demonstrate how that front five caused Sheffield United untold problems in that first half. And it's essentially is something we were able to exploit in order to get a leg up and basically batter them, tear them apart. So if I share the screen with you guys now, you'll see this is Arsenal really, really early on in the game. And you can see that that front five is in place, right? But the interesting thing here is not just the positions of the front five. You can see Martin Odegaard is playing like a right-sided centre forward. You could see that Bukayo Saka is keeping the width on this right-hand side. You can see Kai Havertz is occupying one man. Declan Rice has pushed up and is occupying another one, and that's the right fullback who's had to tuck in, and Martinelli's maintaining the width. When you play against the back four and you attack with the front five, you'll always have an extra man. It's that bloody simple. And I couldn't believe that Chris Wilder went the way he went in this game. If I take this on a little bit, and I'll just show you, because I'm only allowed to show you screenshots. It's really annoying because, of course, of the copyright rules and all the rest of it. Let me just mute that so you're not getting any audio coming through from that, because that's another thing you'll strike me off for. But if I take it on a little bit and we get to the point where Bukayo Saka cuts a ball back and Arsenal are causing their opposition all sorts of problems. Look at this. Look at how that front five have decided to go into the penalty area and cause problems. Saka's got options of Havertz, of Rice, of Odegaard in there. He's also got Martinelli free at the back post. But it's not just about that. It's about the position of the players around that as well. Look at how we squeeze up and suffocate the opposition. Look at where Jorginho is. Look at where Ben White is. Both of those guys have pushed up towards the edge of the penalty area. And what Arsenal have done, using Jakub Kivior as well in this instance, is squeezed Sheffield United back into their own penalty area. So even if they want to get out, they can't. And that's what's so impressive about this Arsenal side. They just make it so damn difficult for you. If I take it on, this was, of course, the incident that I was showing you there, or the build-up play I was showing you there, was in the lead-up to that opportunity where Saka hit the crossbar. And then, of course, it came to Martinelli, who, with a kind of acrobatic effort, steered the ball towards goal. But again, I want to pause it and show you another bit here, because once again, we're talking about the occupying of defenders. We're talking about Arsenal squeezing up the pitch. Here it is again, that front five. You can see Martinelli, you can see Rice, you can see Havertz, you can see Odegaard in your picture, and Saka is maintaining the width on this near side. That is not within shot at this moment in time. But again, the five-man front line is causing Sheffield United all sorts of problems. There's spaces, there's gaps in their back four because they're having to get out into those wide areas and sort of mark people. You can see on the far side of this picture that Jakub Kivior is up there like a left winger as well, making sure that he's occupying a space that now Sheffield United would be concerned about. But again, I go back to this suffocation point, which I think is massive here. I think this is the key bit, really. It's not just about what those guys do. It's the fact that that is followed up. And if you watched Monday Night Football last night, Thierry Henry was really good when talking about Manchester City, about the fact that they're really compact, even as an attacking unit. When you think of the term compact unit, you think of defensive phases of play. You think of teams trying to stay that way in order to limit spaces and prevent people from hurting them. But actually being compact in an attack can be massively powerful as well. Look at this screenshot here. Gabriel is on the ball in what? The left eight midfield position. Jorginho is just inside of him, really, really high up the pitch. He's supposed to be the defensive midfielder in this instance because Declan Rice has bombed on beyond him. Saliba is probably 10, 12 yards deeper than Jorginho. He's squeezed right up into the half. And Ben White, the right back, is playing in the right eight position with Kivior, as I've mentioned already, wide on the left wing. Arsenal are attacking as a unit and are suffocating teams in these types of situations. And that is why the likes of Sheffield United, they just can't get out. Now, if I take it on, this obviously results in Arsenal breaking the deadlock. This was the goal that Martin Odegaard scored. And you can see here, of course, that Martin Odegaard is around about the penalty spot. And, you know, Arsenal have managed to create that bit of space for him by Kai Havertz essentially darting across the near post. Now, I'm sure that here Kai Havertz got a call from Martin Odegaard. I'm certain of it. But the intelligence and the awareness of what's going on in and around you to, you know, when you're 6 yards out from goal, to realize and have the composure and the calmness to go, nope, I'm not in the best position here. Someone else in my team is, and allow him to have that, I think is massive. It's so, so powerful to have intelligent footballers in those types of areas. And, you know, if I take that on even a little bit further, we know what happens. Martin Odegaard ends up rolling the ball into the back of the net. Now, I'm going to take it on to the next goals because there's a lot to get through. Of course, Arsenal in free scoring form at the moment. This one, in my opinion, is about a bit of individual brilliance from Bukayo Saka. Obviously, he takes on his man. Arsenal work the cutback. And in the end, it turns out to be an own goal. But again, have a look at this. Have a look at this from Bukayo Saka. He receives the ball in that wide area. And the minute Arsenal work it out into the wide area, all that's on the mind of Martin Odegaard and Declan Rice is, let's get into that forward line. We've got to bust the gut and make sure that we get into that forward line. You know, at that point, they weren't quite there. They weren't in a position to, you know, to occupy defenders. They just dropped that little bit deeper temporarily. But now they're both switched on. As soon as the ball gets worked out to Saka on that right-hand side, both of those guys are saying, I need to get into that front line. That's where I'm going to do damage. That's how I'm going to cause the opposition problems. Now, I'll take it on a little bit further. We all know, of course, what happens with that. Bukayo Saka roasted Austin Trusty and turned the ball back, and it was turned in at the far post by a Sheffield United defender inadvertently. Now, that was Arsenal's second goal, of course, but again, it comes from the panic and the pandemonium that we cause in the box by having bodies getting in there nice and quickly. Now, if I go on to the third goal, the goal scored by Gabriel Martinelli, which of course took a deflection on its way in. Just have a look at this. As soon as Arsenal work the ball infield, again, Arsenal know that they need to get bodies forward and they need to get bodies forward quickly. So as soon as Odegaard receives this and turns inside, look how many players have got their heads down and are sprinting towards the remaining three defenders because Sheffield United have been caught on a transition here. Odegaard's carrying it. He's got Declan Rice just inside of him. He's got Martinelli on the left, who he eventually picks out. Kai Havertz is getting involved in this move as well. So is Bukayo Saka. And even our right back on this near side, Ben White, knows what he needs to do, knows where he needs to be, knows that he needs to get his head down, turn the burners on and sprint forward and join in with that attack because we want that front five, don't we? And Martinelli and Kivior combine on that occasion, and Martinelli's effort takes a deflection and goes into the back of the net. So a really good team goal from Arsenal again. Now, let's take a look at the Kai Havertz goal, which for me was my favourite last night. I know the Ben White one was pretty good as well, but I really enjoyed the Kai Havertz one. Have a look at this. Martinelli's running down the left-hand side, but he's been caught up and there's a challenge made against Gabriel Martinelli. In the end, he was fouled as well. But look at the willingness of Kai Havertz and Martin Odegaard and Bukayo Saka to get into that front line. Now, this will happen sometimes when you've got players as quick and as sharp as Gabriel Martinelli. There will be times where you find yourself behind the play, no matter how forward thinking you are, no matter how aggressive you are in your starting positions. When someone is as quick as him and you work the ball out nice and early, you can find yourself behind the play. But none of those guys are accepting it. None of those guys are dropping their heads. Now, at this point, the game is done, guys. The game is done. It's 3-0. You would think there's no need, really, to be busting a gut to get up alongside Gabriel Martinelli in this situation and in this scenario. But no, these guys want to make their mark. These guys are in a ruthless mood and they want to score more and they want to inflict more and more damage on this Sheffield United side. So when the foul happens, it's not all over for Arsenal. It's just not all over because Kai Havertz, look at Kai Havertz' position. He's not drifted into the middle, given that he's playing as the nine. He's not away from the play. He's not disconnected from what's actually happening. Instead, he recognises, I think, quite early on that Martinelli might have a problem and that, of course, there's another defender in field who's partly worried about Martin Odegaard's movement, but may at some point have to go across and try and engage Martinelli. So he sticks with him. He stays close to him, makes sure that if anything loose breaks, he is there to pick up the pieces. And that is exactly what happens. As I take this on, the ball breaks. There's a foul. Havertz picks it up. Havertz makes his way into the penalty area, looks up, has a quick glance, looks at the goalkeeper's position. He's got Odegaard inside of him if he wants. If he wants to try and find someone at the far post, Saka's probably going to get there. But no, he looks up. He's aware of all of his surroundings, exactly what's happening, and he decides that he's just going to drive it across the goal. And it was a real confident, cold and emphatic finish from Kai Havertz, and I really, really did enjoy that goal. Now, the points that I'm making with regards to these goals are all pretty similar in that we're talking about a team that attack in numbers. We're talking about a team that are relentless in their approach. And we're talking about a team that are not taking their foot off the gas, despite having already wrapped up the result of this football match. I'll take it on to the fifth goal, the one just before halftime, where Declan Rice got in on this, on the act. And listen, Declan Rice was desperate, wasn't he? You looked at some of the positions he was taking up. He was brilliant and he was superb. And, you know, he deserved it in the end. But just look at sort of his involvement in this again. You know, there was a number of occasions in which Rice got into the box and became a part of that front five, as I've explained. This is another scenario where, again, Arsenal have the front five. But look, sometimes it's not always going to be the same players. Sometimes it's going to be a different group of players. And here you can see sort of like a five made up of White on the right, Saka just inside of him, Rice in the box, Havertz in the box, and Martinelli on the far side. And then that is followed up by another layer of three Arsenal players who are probably 7 or 8 yards from the edge of the penalty area. Odegaard, Jorginho, and Kivior in this instance. But again, that's backed up, that's followed up, and it's followed up by Arsenal's two centre-halves, Saliba and Gabriel. When people talk about Saliba and Gabriel, they always talk about what they do defensively. And, you know, you're spot on to highlight that because they're both incredibly talented defenders. But what's really remarkable about these two is how comfortable they are doing exactly this. They are midway inside the Sheffield United half. They are the last line of Arsenal defence. And they're not worried. They're not concerned. They trust in the system. They believe in their ability to win foot races if Sheffield United were to clear the ball long. And they back themselves in one-on-one duels. They're such good one-on-one defenders that they feel confident enough to step into these types of areas, be a part of that pressing, suffocating machine, essentially, yet still be effective defensively. And again, it was a good point made by Thierry Henry last night on Monday Night Football about the fact that, you know, for this Arsenal side, you know, are they the greatest at defending their own box? Maybe they're not. But the truth is that they don't really allow those situations to develop in the first place. Therefore, they're not having to sort of worry about that too much. But, you know, this goal, eventually the ball gets worked back inside to Declan Rice, who's really good in his movement here because he's aware. He's not static in the box. You can see him moving in this screenshot. He decides that once the ball gets worked out into a slightly wider position, that he's going to make that dart into the space. Now, that space is created by the fact that Arsenal have this front five and are pulling people out of position. They're maintaining a good width, which means that the distances between the defenders are bigger and bigger, and that causes problems. And when Declan Rice gets on the ball, he eventually finishes. Now, there's not anything really tactical to analyze about the Ben White goal, but of course it was a really good goal. So I do want to give you something on that. But what I will say is, again, it's an example of Arsenal getting bodies in the box nice and quickly, having that desire to do it, and then, of course, executing it really, really well. So I don't know why I've closed that tab. Silly me. Let me bring it back open and I can show you just that as well, because, of course, the ball gets worked inside to Ben White by Kai Havertz, who produced an excellent bit of control on that right-hand side. Then he cut in, laid it off to White, who kind of let it run across his body and then hit it with the left foot. But again, look at the bodies Arsenal are getting in and around the Sheffield United box. You know, Rice is on the edge of the box. He's in the D. Kivior's pushed up on the left-hand side. I think that's Martinelli as well in the central position. And White is the one that joins in on this occasion. It doesn't matter who it is. As long as you have enough bodies and you occupy the right spaces, then you will more often than not have man advantages that if you can then exploit, you're going to create really, really good goal scoring opportunity. So those were my thoughts on the goals last night from a tactical standpoint. Let me know if you enjoyed that. Leave a like on the video if you enjoyed that. Subscribe to the channel if you enjoyed that. And we're going to move on to some numbers just after this. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Chronicles of Aguna. Let's have a quick look at the comments section. What are you guys saying? BX Gunner says that our left side is just as good as the right side now. We're a balanced 11. The left side has certainly come on a lot. And I think that's down to a number of things. I think Kivior's getting better. I think that Martinelli's rediscovered some of the form that we saw last season, whereas there was a bit of a drop-off a little bit earlier on in the campaign from him. And Moss highlights Kivior and Ben White's involvement, which is massive in the attacks, as I've just explained. Now, look, there will be games where you don't want to be that gung-ho in how you're pushing your fullbacks on. You know, there will be, like, I wouldn't be that expansive and adventurous against Manchester City, for example. Not at the Etihad anyway. But there are games where, you know, you have enough control of the ball and you have enough belief in your ability to defend the threat of the opposition that you will do that. And when it works, it's brilliant, brilliant to see. Nuafo, I beg your pardon, says, Arsenal's team play and presence of mind around where each player on and off the ball is going to be is spot on. It's not guessing what the boys are displaying. No, it's not guessing at all. This is well-drilled, well-coached. Arsenal might not win the Premier League this season. There's a lot that comes into winning the Premier League. It's not just about performance level. It's about holding your nerve. It's about having the rub of the green sometimes. There are a lot of factors that go into becoming champions when, you know, you get to the business end of the season, because things that you were doing without thinking about in the first part of the campaign become more and more important, and therefore the pressure can get to you and affect and impact your performance. Whatever happens between now and the end of the season, whether Arsenal win the Premier League or not, what is abundantly clear and is becoming clearer and clearer with every passing week is that this is a really well-coached side by a manager who is just improving week by week and whose philosophy, I think, is still in the development phase. I think he's taken things from Pep Guardiola, somebody that he worked alongside and who is, would have been a real and is a real inspiration to him. He's taken elements of Arsene Wenger's game when it comes to the counter-attacking stuff. I think, you know, honestly, there's a lot of similarities to some of the things that Wenger used to apply. I think the defensive shape stuff, I think he's taken a bit of that from David Moyes as well. And people might laugh at that, but I really do think he's got to a point now where he has his own way and he has his own philosophy and he has his own style. And there are some things that are pretty similar to some of those managers that I've mentioned. And maybe a lot of the kind of base theory is the same. But Mikel Arteta seems to be in a place now where he is fine tweaking his theory now and his philosophy. And he's got a group of players that are really willing to kind of buy into that. And why wouldn't they be? They've seen results improve dramatically as a result. And now you're seeing a real connected Arsenal from the dugout onto the pitch, into the stands. And that's why Arsenal are such a big, big threat this season. I really, really do believe that. Okay, let's take it on. Let's do some numbers then. Arsenal running out 6-0 winners at Bramall Lane. Just the 6 goals this week. Bloody hell. Incredible form, aren't we? We really, really are. Okay, let's run through some of these numbers. So, since the start of 2024, Arsenal have scored 31 goals and conceded just 3. That is remarkable. Now, I think we've played 7 league games since the turn of the year. So, 31 divided by 7 means we're averaging 4.4 goals a game since the turn of the year. That is just remarkable. For a side that don't have a striker, eh? How about that? Saliba has surpassed Cazorla's number of passes record by a single player in a Premier League game. He completed 169 last night. That is more than the entire Sheffield United team managed, by the way. And only 3 players in the Premier League since 2003, when this kind of stuff was tracked, have completed more in the whole competition. Both, all 3 of them, I beg your pardon, were Man City players. You probably won't be surprised to hear. Kai Havertz has more league goal contributions this summer than Bernardo Silva, Bruno Fernandes, Madison, Hoyland, Rashford, Diaz, Gakpo, Szoboszlai, and Doku. How about that? Kai Havertz, the flop of the season, the worst signing of the summer, apparently. Look at the impact he's having. It's brilliant to see. You know, he finally feels at home. You can see that he's on the same wavelength as his teammates. You can see that he's playing with a swagger, with a confidence. And you could see last night that he was really, really enjoying himself. The way he took on the goal that he scored, I think, was indicative of where his confidence is at this moment in time. Because I think Kai Havertz might have dwelled on that for a second or so earlier on in the season. Maybe he'd have dragged it wide. Maybe he wouldn't have had the belief and the conviction to apply the type of finish that he did. Maybe he'd have looked to work it inside to Odegaard or try and find Saka at the back post. Not this version of Kai Havertz, though, because he is really, really on fire. And he knows that he's in a good moment right now. And he knows that he's got a big part to play for this Arsenal side between now and the end of the season. Look, he's Arsenal's first choice striker at the moment. Gabriel Jesus has to win that position back from him. He really does. Because Kai Havertz has come in and he's been remarkable. He's been sensational. He's been performing at a level that I would argue is beyond anything that we've even seen from Jesus this season, who I think, when he came in last summer, made a massive, massive impact on Arsenal as an attacking unit. Always talk about him being a facilitator, Jesus. Well, right now, Kai Havertz is a facilitator, but he's also bloody scoring goals as well, which is... Which is fantastic to see. Okay, Kai Havertz, sticking on the theme of the German, has now scored 7 goals from just 11 shots on target in the Premier League this season. Now, I don't know how to look at this, because I could either look at it and say, bloody hell, 7 from 11, that's quite a good ratio. But the fact that he's only had 11 shots on target when he's had as many opportunities as he has probably is a bit of a negative and shows you that he's not been hitting the target enough. So I guess you could kind of frame that one up either way. Let's move on to another one. David Raya missed the first 4 games of the season and still has more clean sheets than any other Premier League goalkeeper with 9. How about that in terms of silencing the doubters? We're talking about Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz has been really, really good lately, in my opinion. And, you know, I think that although people, I believe, were right to have the debate around him earlier in the season and when we were seeing other areas in the team not functioning, I think people were well within their rights to say, was that the best use of £65 million? But I really do believe with Kai Havertz, that debate needs to be put to bed now. And I think with David Raya, it's been a really, really similar situation in that you've probably had to look a little bit closer. You've had to scratch beneath the surface to see exactly what it is that David Raya brings and how he's improved us. And I think a lot of it is evident when you go into the kind of underlying data and metrics. But over this period of time where Arsenal have been in really good form and have conceded just 3 goals in 7 league games, you're seeing a more confident David Raya in terms of the way he comes and claims things. I think his distribution's been better. And some of the underlying metrics we've seen, for example, the success rate that he has when he comes out to claim crosses in comparison to maybe what Aaron Ramsdale had. You start to get a picture of why now Mikel Arteta and Iñaki Caña, the Arsenal goalkeeping coach, wanted to make this signing, despite many of us feeling that we probably didn't really have a goalkeeper who needed replacing. This is what it's like at the elite level. You need to try and find the most marginal gains at times to make the difference, because everybody is so good. Everybody's performing at such a high level. How can you gain a slight advantage? How can you make that extra 2-3% up that maybe you fell short last season? And David Raya has helped Arsenal, of course, to do that. This was the first time in Premier League history that Arsenal have been 5 goals ahead at half time. I find that one quite difficult to believe. And obviously it's right. It's come from Albinio, who is the stats king when it comes to Arsenal. There's no doubt about that. But the reason I found this one quite surprising was because I can remember loads of games where Arsene Wenger's Arsenal would go out, start the game like a house on fire and blitz you within 20 minutes and it'd be game over. You know, I remember a lot of threes. I remember some fours. I can't pinpoint a five, but I find it hard to believe that we'd never done this before. Obviously, you know, that's just me not having the kind of the knowledge there. But yeah, it's remarkable that a team that has scored as many goals as us over the years haven't done this before. Arsenal have the best expected goal difference in the Premier League this season. The expected goal difference is 37.91. Obviously, our goal difference is higher than that. But in terms of, you know, looking at, again, as I keep mentioning, underlying metrics, underlines that, Manchester City are at 32.34. So their expected goal difference is a whole 5 and a bit lower than ours. And Liverpool's is at 26.36. So when you think about what Liverpool's expected goal difference is and what their goal difference actually is, you could argue that they've been a little bit fortunate in some instances. Manchester City too, but not to the same level. It feels like Liverpool's underlying metrics are actually quite a bit weaker than Manchester City's. And that's why I think there are a lot of Arsenal fans out there that believe that in that game on Sunday at Anfield between Liverpool and Man City, ideally we'd like a draw, because if we beat Brentford, it would keep us top. But I think if you were going to pick one winner, there are a lot of people that would make the case that actually it's better that Liverpool win, because over the course of the season, perhaps those underlying metrics are going to catch up with them and maybe they will level out a little bit. I don't know. Let me know your thoughts on that in the live chat box. Here's a good one. Arsenal's goal difference is higher than Manchester United's points tally in the Premier League. Our goal difference currently sits at plus 45 and United have just 44 points on the board. Any opportunity to throw a bit of shade at Old Trafford. According to Who Scored, Bukayo Saka is the highest rated player in the Premier League this season with an average rating of 7.72 out of 10. Now that is only up against players who have played 20 or more times in the Premier League this season. But that's a real mark of how good and consistent and strong Bukayo Saka's performances have been over the course of the campaign. Ben White's goal at Bramall Lane was Arsenal's 10,000th goal, making a bit of history. The Arsenal defender, he doesn't get many. And as Thierry Henry put it last night, when Ben White's scoring goals like that, you know you're having a good night. The only team to have more than 60 points after the 27 Premier League matches mark and not finish in the top two was Arsenal, who finished third back in the 07-08 season. So can we be confident that we're going to finish in the top two? Not quite, because the level of the competition we're up against this time. But it does give you confidence and belief that we're at least going to finish in the top three. I know that that's not what we should be aspiring for, and we should be aiming for more and better than that. But that was an interesting stat, I thought, too. So there are some numbers for you to kind of summarize where Arsenal were at last night and where Arsenal are today in general. Okay. Let's see what we've got in the live chat box. A big hello to regular Russ, who's just joined us a little while ago. Cass says, with Havertz, I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy with Arsenal paying that fee for him. But give the boy praise because he's been on fire and long may it continue. Chelsea laughed at us for paying that, but they wasted the money on rubbish. Yeah, that's a fair point. It's a fair point. Okay, I want to share something else with you, a little bit more analytical than you'd normally get out of me, but we're trying to make things a little bit better here on the Chronicles of Aguna. I want to do things in a little bit more depth. And what I want to share with you guys is this, which is Arsenal's passing network in the first 45 minutes. Now, this only accounts for the period up to when Arsenal made their first substitution, which was, of course, at halftime. Bukayo Saka was taken off due to illness. So this only accounts for the first 45 minutes. And this comes from the brilliant Scott J. Willis, canonstats.com. Make sure you go over and check out the website. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter as well. But just looking at some of these kind of metrics, you can see Arsenal's passing network here essentially broken down. Look at the average positions. Look at where everybody is. They're inside that Sheffield United half. We've established that we pinned them back and we caused them all sorts of problems. The most passes were made by William Saliba. And as I say, you know, he broke a record yesterday. He surpassed Santi Cazorla with that. Most progressive passes on the night came from Martin Odegaard. Now, I say on the night, in that first 45-minute period. Most deep completions came from Martin Odegaard. Most XG chain came from Martin Odegaard. Most XG build-up was Gabriel from the back. Most XT passing was William Saliba. And the most XT received was Kai Havertz. So to turn that into English, basically Martin Odegaard was pulling the strings. William Saliba was running the show from a deeper position. And Kai Havertz was the one that everybody was looking to work the ball into at every given opportunity. Gives you a focal point, gives you something to aim at, someone to aim at. And that's really, really important. Now, I'm not saying Gabriel Jesus doesn't do that, because I think he does. But I just think Kai Havertz's physical presence makes that a little bit more feasible at certain points and at certain times, and probably gives you a little bit more confidence as someone playing that pass forward, that it's going to reach its destination, and that if there is a physical challenge, he'll be able to hold someone off, maybe win you a free kick or whatever. But I just thought that was interesting because Arsenal are really, really, really impressing at this moment in time. And all these underlying metrics and stats and data just go to back that up. So, you know, be confident, be happy with what we're seeing at the moment, but obviously know as well that there is a long way to go. And a good friend of mine texted me last night and she said, she was texting me about something else. And then she texted me saying, I bet you're enjoying watching Arsenal literally ripping Sheffield United a new one. And my response was, do you know what? As much as I'm loving it, and I really, really am, I'm just not sure if I can take the emotional roller coaster that is to come in the next few weeks. I just don't know that I can do it for my own sort of sanity. It was really, really tough last year to pick ourselves up mentally after kind of things went south. When the dust settled, I was able to look back on the season and say it was a really good season. And I had some really great memories. And it was probably the first full season that I got to cover Arsenal as a reporter week in, week out, without too often having to go off and do other games and other things since I sort of changed careers. So it was really, really special for me. I just wish it was crowned off with a title of some sort. And I'm hoping that it will be this time around. But the emotional journey that we're about to embark on is just going to be incredible. Highs, lows, there will be both along the way. Let's hope that we end it on a high, though, of course. Yeah, that's it from me, really. I'd love to get you guys' thoughts on the show. Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the kind of statistical bit? Should we do a bit more of that going forward? Let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear from you. If you've got any questions as well that you'd like to throw my way for the last sort of 5-10 minutes of the show, please do send those over as well. And I'm going to take some of your thoughts too. So get involved in the live comments as we look to wrap up this episode of the Chronicles of Aguna. Have your say. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Daily Arsenal Podcast with me, Harry Simeon. Okay. Right. Charles says, there's always one. These stats are nice and all Gooners. These stats are nice and all Gooners, and I'm happy for Arsenal. But the most important stat is the league table. He then goes on to say, I remember a time where the English didn't even care about an assist. Now it's just a bloat of meaningless stats. Well, football's changed. Football's developed. Football's moved forward. Football's progressed. And I would argue that, yeah, there was a time that the English didn't care about this stuff as much, and that it wasn't as big a thing in English football as it has been in other places. And you know what? Perhaps that's partly why England haven't won a major trophy since 1966, because they always, throughout my years growing up, got outdone tactically, missed the details in certain games. It wasn't for a lack of talent. They just weren't tactically on the same level and didn't, I think, understand the game to the same degree and to the same level. It's not rotten luck. It's not a coincidence. I think that football might have been founded in England, but football in other places progressed. Then I think that the Premier League is the best league in the world because it has some of the best foreign coaches and some of the best foreign players. And I really do think that they have helped to bring the game forward here. And if you take that away and you go back to that old school mentality, then you'd be stuck. I really do think that English football is improving in terms of, when I say English football, I mean England football and the players. You know, I don't think years ago you'd find too many talents at the level of, Foden, for example. Look at how brilliant he is under sort of Pep Guardiola's tutelage. He's gone up to a whole new level. Bukayo Saka is a generational talent for me, working under a coach who's renowned for getting the best out of wingers. Just ask Raheem Sterling and various others that sort of plied their trade at Manchester City while Arteta was there. I think there is, you know, you look at the youth teams in England, they're improving. You know, you look at the under 17s, under 21s, that level is getting better because the understanding of the game is greater. And I do think that a lot of that has come from learning lessons from others and the people that have come to these shores. So yeah, maybe in the past it didn't matter. Now it does. You're definitely right that the league table is the only one that matters at the end of the season. But if you're doing all the right things, then your chances of achieving what you want are greatly increased, of course. Casey Clips says, for me, Kivior and Havertz and Jorginho are first choices. Imagine I said 2 years ago that the likes of Zinchenko, Jesus and Partey would struggle to get into this Arsenal starting 11. Look how far we've come. It's a really, really good point. But the thing is, right, is that I'm always very kind of wary of this conversation because I think you're spot on. Right now, on current form, there's no case for any of those three to be in the starting 11. Completely agree. I think they're all good players and I think they'll all have a big part to play between now and the end of the season. But I don't want to be disrespectful to those guys, and I know you're not doing it, mate, but I don't want to fall into that trap because I do think Zinchenko, Jesus' arrival last summer or the summer before, made a massive impact and helped us take that step to the point where we were then competitive again. And I think that, yeah, maybe we're going to leave them behind, not so much tactically, but because their fitness issues are ongoing. And the same with Thomas Partey. But they're all wonderful, wonderful players. And to have them as squad players, which is essentially what they are right now, is quite the step forward, isn't it? Really, really is. Damian Kelly says, a lot of Arsenal YouTubers have been so harsh on Thomas Partey. He showed a bit of rustiness and they ripped him to threads. They want him gone, but he might just help us win the league. I don't want him gone. And I did say on the post-match show that I thought that he was off the pace and looked rusty. I wasn't beating him up for it. I think that that's understandable and to be expected, given how long he's been out for. But it did serve as a reminder to me that, yeah, it's great that we got these guys back, but we're probably going to need to wait a few weeks to see them at anywhere near the level that we know they're capable of and anywhere near the level that we become accustomed to. Okay, let's take this one from Tom. Zed Tom, he says, Harry, let's say that there were a bit of fisticuffs happening during the Liverpool City game. Who on each side would you want to see get a long ban? For Man City, it's Rodri. Rodri is really, really important to them. And I think that Man City without Rodri lose a big kind of percentage of what they are. Kevin De Bruyne is great as well. Foden's great. They've got great players all over the place. Erling Haaland too. But Rodri is the one that comes to mind when I think of if I could have essentially one City player banned. For Liverpool, it's difficult because ordinarily I'd say Mo Salah. But right now, I feel like it's Darwin Nunez because he's such a bloody nuisance to defend against. And he's just got this relenting nature and he just constantly causes people problems and invariably comes out on top. So, yeah, he was called a shit Andy Carroll by the Nottingham Forest fans the other day. And he had the final say, didn't he? He did. Afsar says, do you think this long three-week break will affect our form, flow and rhythm? And as you know, it will be Manchester City after the international break. Look, it is what it is. That's the way the fixture schedule has panned out. I do think it's difficult after an international break to, you know, restore the rhythm and the sort of routine that you maybe established before that. Players going away to different places, returning at different times, all varying in their contributions for their national teams, i.e. some of them will play, you know, 20 minutes. Some of them will play a whole game. Some of them will play two whole games. Others won't get a minute. So, yeah, it's difficult to kind of get everyone back on that level. But look, we've had rest. We're going to have rest before the international break. We had that trip to Dubai, which has done us the world of good. We just got to shut up and get on with it. All the problems that we might have as a result of the international break, i.e. people coming back with varying fitness levels and maybe being a little bit rusty at club level because they've been on international duty. City are going to have that too when we play them. So you're not going to catch me crying about that or using that as an excuse. I'd rather that the game was this Saturday with Manchester City. But also, you know, if, for example, they draw with Liverpool or they get beaten by Liverpool, but let's say they draw with Liverpool, then actually, if we go to the Etihad and get a draw, that's probably okay and keeps us still in with a great shout. Whereas if they go and win, then you look at the gap that they open up and you probably go into that game thinking, bloody hell, we need to beat them now, which is a completely different thing. To go there needing all 3 points is very, very different to going there and needing 1 point or being content, satisfied with 1 point. But hey, look, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Okay, guys, I am going to leave it there. Thank you all so, so much for tuning in to another episode of the Chronicles of a Gooner podcast with me, Harry Simeon. Don't forget to leave a like on the video if you haven't done so already. In fact, I'm going to check how many we've got. Not even 100. Come on, guys. What's going on here? Not even 100 likes on the board. Let's make sure we get that to more like 250, 300. That would be very, very much appreciated. Subscribe to the channel if you're new. If you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review as well. Give me a follow on X at Harry Simeon. Give me a follow on TikTok as well, which I'm using a lot now, at Harry Simeon. Daily content over on there. And I will see you all very, very soon. Until the next one, take care of yourselves. Have a great Tuesday evening. You know what? Put your feet up. Watch some Champions League. Take it all in before our nervy one next week with FC Porto. Until the next one, take care of yourselves. All the best. Goodbye.